B-Pod Studios.
We're Boston's home for sports.
Hi, guys. Love your show. Thanks for all you do.
The home for live.
We try to relate to the listener.
And local.
A guy in Boston.
And we do it together.
Sometimes you guys aggravate me so much, I turn you up. Here I am, turning back on.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Fire?
People need to chillax.
Mike Francesa appears to rip fought while ripping Adam Gase.
I love meatballs.
Do you?
Let's go, Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Go, Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Wall dick, well, yeah.
She made out with my dad.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Get this week's dog out of here.
Good morning, everybody. As old tribute to Freddie T there.
Strong.
Maybe back at some point. Hardy and Adam Jones here this morning. Good morning, Adam.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hey, good morning. Morning, everybody. Quite a night last night.
It's a good morning. Good morning around these parts.
Good to just be talking about a little puck. A little round ball, you know?
Sure.
Who do you think's going to win? That type of stuff. It is, the conversation is going to be different all day here on the Sports Hub. So prepare yourselves for that. Not just from the NBA point, which, of course, is a huge, huge story. In many ways, the story, certainly nationally. And, you know, if we're going to get into, you know, what's important, obviously that's the important story for us. In the immediate aftermath of an absolute meltdown from the Bruins last night, that's where we'll begin, because that is what is on a lot of people's minds as they're waking up this morning. The NBA thing is going to be part of our conversation throughout the show, and I would suspect all day here on the Sports Hub. And, you know, Bankroll Boys will still be here at 7 a.m. We're still going to have Bob Soucy on with his report from training camp or the playground. I think yesterday it was more of like a playground report.
Oh, is it kid duty? Is that what he had?
But yeah, he's a dad. He's a great dad.
Yeah.
You know?
The best.
Does he need to, if we're going to talk to Bob Soucy, does he need to be in the Foxborough zip code? Is that like a priority for you? Does he need to have, is peepers peeled on the field?
It's a good.
Damn it. Jones and I have done a training camp style show for how many years?
Oh, so many now.
So many.
Good 3-4.
And we always do peepers peeled.
Yep. Peepers peeled. What do you got your eyes on? That sort of thing.
Yeah. Give it the old looky-loo.
Yeah, right.
Who's getting the looky-loo tonight?
Yeah, that's a big, it's a staple of preseason.
Right, but we're not doing that because there's no preseason games.
No, we've been robbed.
Anyway, Soucy will be somewhere. We'll talk with him. But the Bruins last night, Jones.
Pretty good. Pretty good effort, I thought. I mean, look, when you get boned by the NHL and they make you play on two consecutive days.
Okay.
Unheard of, Hardy. Unprecedented. It's not like they do it 10, 12, 15, 20 times a regular season.
All right.
Unheard of that they have to go out there and play on the back-to-back. And I thought it was especially unfair that Tampa doesn't have to do that and the Bruins do. The Bruins came out and, you know, I thought courageously fought through what they were dealt with, having to play with an older roster on consecutive days. And I thought, you know, 7-1 could have been 10-1, could have been 12-1. Like I thought all things considered, not as bad as it could have been. I thought a pretty good effort.
This was the gist of the very short text that Jones sent me last night, to which I replied, you're going to turn me into Cattles by Friday.
Like if you make it till Friday, you would have made it longer than Cattles.
The game last night was in contrast to the game before, in which a lot of people were killing the Bruins yesterday, saying that was, you know, a bad effort all three periods. And I was like, you know, it wasn't really all that bad. You know, it was, they forced overtime. They didn't play their best game, but the top line produced on a couple of goals. And I thought there were moments of really good effort in that game. And they forced overtime against a team that was playing well. I feel like I almost deserve an apology from people today who...
Oh, you want the apology.
I want the apology. Okay. I want people to call and say, Hardy, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm sorry I said that. Like, and not just like...
Hockey Hardy.
You know, Joe Listener.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Billy Jaffe. I'm talking about hockey guys who said the Bruins put forth a bad effort two nights ago.
Can we get, Dan, can we get Cam Neely? Is it too early to get Cam Neely on the phone? Maybe we could get him to call in.
Did Cam Neely say they put forth a bad effort two nights ago?
That's a good point. Yeah, probably not Cam Neely, but yeah.
Anyone who said they had a bad...
The Jaff man.
Yeah. Anyone who said that was a poor effort. How about last night?
Yeah.
What'd you think? Forget about the bad hand they were dealt just for a moment, Jones.
Sure.
By the NHL, which I do not believe. I do not side with you in that they were whining all that much about it. Mm. Who was whining about it?
Cassidy after the game was whining about the refs quite a bit. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's more the fan base I would direct that at than the Bruins themselves.
Okay.
The Bruins were whiny about the refs last night, which you know, that second goal was absurd. I'll give fans that. But, no, I mean, look, Tampa's better than the Bruins, right? Can we acknowledge that? That doesn't mean the Bruins can't win the series. The Bruins, I think, were better than the Blues last year. And the Blues won the series because, you know, the Blues outworked them and outplayed them. So I'm not saying it's impossible for the Bruins to win the series. I wouldn't say that. You see upsets happen all the time in the NHL. But Tampa's better than Boston. They are. They just are. Last night was not about the talent gap, right? I mean, last night was from a weird lineup to begin the game. Like, no Sean Corrali. I would hope. Is Corrali hurt? Like, do we know the full extent there? Corrali was a man at the end of regulation in game two. Both he and Marchand were winning puck battles all over the ice late in regulation. It led to Marchand's game-tying goal to get it to overtime that you were referencing before. Then they laid down in overtime when they got outshot 9-1. But the lineup was strange. You know, I thought the Bruins maybe kind of half fought back into it early in the second period when they got it to 3-1. Then the Killorn goal was a backbreaker, and they threw in the towel. So last night, to me, wasn't about the talent gap. Game two was about the talent gap. Tampa's better. Last night was about their poor effort. They felt like they didn't want to be there.
They acted like they didn't want to be there. And talk about throwing in the towel. It's one thing to have one shot on goal in the first 10 minutes of the second period when you're already trailing. But you're not trailing by a ton. You know,
it was 2-0 and 3-1. Like, they were in the game.
Yes, yes. It was 2-0, and then they made it 3-0 after the Bergeron high stick, and they go on the penalty kill, and Kucherov has the absolute brilliant pass to
Killorn. It was Killorn goal.
That made it 3-0? I don't think so.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. No. That was the one that made it 4-1.
Sergachev.
The Killorn goal, yeah.
Right. But after that, they go on the power play. Marchand scores the goal, the exact same goal that he scored the night before. The beautiful pass.
Krug.
They allow him to camp right next to the net there over on that left side, which is where he scores from all the time. You know, that's his zip code over there. And whether he's getting that wrister up over, you know, the blocker side of a goalie who's turning to face him a little bit, or whether for two nights in a row he takes a pass. I don't even think he got his stick on it last night.
No.
He just backstopped it with his skates, and it went in that way. But it's 3-1. Okay. Did it feel like a hockey game at 3-1?
No, it wasn't for very long. It wasn't for very long. They rolled right back over. They went. What was the fourth goal? Was the fourth goal?
The fourth goal is McAvoy with the bad forearm shiver.
So again, so it's right back into the box. And you know the power plays were way out of whack last night, right? And maybe they got leveled out a little bit at the end of the game once guys started getting sent off. But Tampa had 6, so the Bruins 3. The ref got tangled up with Yanni Gourde on the second goal. So I understand, you know, fans that are frustrated with the referees, but a lot of the Bruins penalties, Hardy, I would say, felt more like a team that was sluggish on the second night of a back-to-back or wasn't fully into it on a back-to-back. And I'm not using the back-to-back as an excuse, right? And anyone who is, I mock. But they just didn't feel like they were ready to go. 22 hours after the overtime game the night before, they didn't feel like they were ready to go.
No.
And I don't know if that's on Cassidy. I don't know if that's on the players. Like, I don't quite exactly know who that's on. I'd probably lean Cassidy, if we're being honest. But they weren't ready to go, and they were getting outworked. A lot of those penalties were because the Bruins were getting outworked and in poor position.
Even on the goal that ended up being scored when it was Lozon who ran into the linesman there. Halak has this habit of going down onto his belly, right? I mean, people get on Rask for going low. Oh, when he's stressed out, when he's feeling the pressure, he gets low. Halak goes down. And he got so low that he barely had to elevate the shot. I mean, it's like, oh, you got to put it up. And sometimes you'll see players having difficulty elevating, you know, when especially if they're on a breakaway and they come around and they're trying to get over on that blocker side, or they're trying to elevate with the backhand, and you know, it's more difficult. He didn't even have to, because Halak went like so far down for me. Oh, thank you for that. Bloop.
Yeah, right. Halak could have put forth, again, we'll keep using this word, I'm sure, a million times. Like, we're talking about Cam Newton and his energy. Like, it's just like a default word to go to. But their effort, like, his effort on that play could have been better.
Halak's effort could have been better. Now,
exactly.
He got hung out to dry by the linesman who screened Lozon. I get it. But, okay, that's how you steal a game. That's how you take away a bona fide scoring chance that's going to turn into a goal. That's the stop that you make. And he didn't make it.
No.
He didn't make it again after McAvoy took the dumb penalty, because guess what? He went straight down onto his belly again. And it was fun watching Vladish, whatever the hell we're going to call him.
Yeah, I liked it.
Do the exact same thing, bless his heart. And it's kind of kooky when you see a guy who's 6'6 flop down onto his stomach too. I don't know what the hell they're teaching these guys.
No.
I don't know crap about goaltending. All I know is that I see guys like Vasilevsky. They don't generally belly flop down onto the ice all that much, unless it is to cover a puck. They don't do it in anticipation of being able to stop the ensuing shot.
How many Bruins were you happy with last night? I can think of, I mean, happy maybe not is even the right word, but okay. How many Bruins do you think like showed up?
It's just incidental stuff. I mean, Marchand being there for that. Okay.
I think Marchand and Krug.
Krug.
I think that's it.
Krug beat the bag out of Tyler Johnson. And
his pass on the Marchand goal was filthy. So, I mean, Krug, I think, was their best player last night. And Marchand, you're right, by default, kicking in a goal. I'll give it to him. Other than that, who showed up? I don't know if anybody showed up.
I don't know. Did Johnson ever come back into the game?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
I picked up on that right away, and then I the announcers last night on the
because he's had like tons of head injuries and stuff, so I mean, that was, you know, with the helmet ripped off and hitting the ice, and I don't think it was dirty by Krug or anything.
It wasn't, no, but
yeah, I actually don't know if he returned.
Krug, you know, his stick got caught up under Krug, and look, that happens all the time. And even if Krug was hanging onto the stick, for Tyler to reach down and to, you know, take a pop at Krug while he's down on the ice, I think it had to be pretty egregious for Krug to get his hackles raised to the point where he's going to fight a guy. Krug doesn't fight a whole lot, and he's a pretty even-keeled guy.
He played in the third period. The fight happened at the end of the second, so he returned.
So Johnson came back in. I hope it was his shoulder that hit, because it looked like he took the full weight of both bodies going down on the ice, and it looked like Krug, you know, pushed his head into the ice. Again, not in a dirty way, but they fell. The ice, slippery. They were fighting. It happens. All right, so Johnson did come back in last night. Krug, maybe Marchand. That's it.
There's your list.
That's it. You can't be happy with anything else or any other effort last night.
Do you give Vladar a pass?
A pass for what?
Well, I just mean, like, you know, just for being thrown into a tough spot.
Should have never been thrown in, guys.
Well,
should have never been in that situation whatsoever.
Do you ever want to see him again in this series?
No.
No. So I don't know. I don't have to give him a pass. If he plays again, it's...
Joe, you're saying it's Tuca's fault.
No, I'm saying Bruce Cassidy got his ass coached off yesterday, made terrible mistakes. And just let me just ask you guys a question. Down 4-1, you pull your goalie with 25 minutes to go. Have you ever seen the Bruins come back from a 3-goal deficit in the playoffs before?
Sure. I watched the game earlier in the day where the Islanders forced overtime being down 3-0.
Yeah. Way to give your team a chance. And how about this? That lineup you threw out there yesterday with Moore, a little cone. That guy's a cone. That's what he is. People just, they just put the puck right around him like a cone. Cassidy sucked yesterday. His decision-making was terrible. And you guys can say whatever you want. I'm not buying this. The fact that they pulled Halak down 4-1 to put in Vlatter, the guy who
Halak was pretty bad, though.
No, he was. Yeah, but think about it like this. On the 5-on-5, he's fine. He had one goal in the 5-on-5.
Fair.
Like, he had three power plays. Like the guy, I know he hasn't been great, but you're going to give me a better option?
Well,
they might have ruined Vlatter's career last night.
That might be true. Good thing they already gave him that extension. But they were flat in front of him too. You know, so like I think part of it from Cassidy was just trying to wake the team up.
Dude, Marchand scores a goal. They start fighting. That's how they get back into games.
Yeah, they scored a goal. Then Tampa scored back again.
But at least you don't give up.
It's
the game.
It's 4-1.
Who cares? You stay in the game.
Right. The game's not away from you. I'm with you, Joe. We're gonna have to break. We're gonna have to get to the other big story of the night. We will be talking a lot of Bruins this morning.
Not with either of you guys.
Okay. Well, just save it, Jones. You just save that. We'll get back to it. But the NBA and the boycotts last night and the games not being played, lots to get to there, which we will do next here on Toucher and Rich with Hardy and Adam Jones and Joe Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Toucher.
Our only concern is your condition.
Rich.
Oh, this guy's a piece of work, huh?
Toucher and Rich. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed. It's Toucher and Rich.
Toucher and Rich. It's Hardy and Adam Jones. Joe Murray and as well. Bankroll Boys will be here at 7 o'clock. But what happened last night? I mean, we're talking Bruins here this morning. We'll be talking a lot about that Bruins loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning. But what really happened last night was the NBA boycotts. And that is the story that is going to permeate and you'll hear about throughout the day and in all forms, not just on sports talk radio, but news. And it's a big deal. I kept hearing it referred to, Jones, as an unprecedented day in sports. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm trying to think of you know, other comps in terms of players, you know, walking out on playoff games. Like, I think unprecedented is probably the right word for it. Yeah.
So there's a lot of talk of boycotts, not just from last night, but for the season, which we'll get into also. But Kenny Smith at one point decided that it was time to put, I guess, put his actions to work and not just talk about it anymore.
This is tough. I mean, right now my head is like ready to explode, like just in the thoughts of what's going on. And I don't know if I'm even appropriate enough to say it, what the players are feeling and how they're feeling. And I haven't talked to any of the players. I'm just driving here and getting into the studio, hearing calls and people talking. And for me, I think the biggest thing now is to kind of, as a black man, as a former player, I think it's best for me to support the players and just not be here tonight.
And figure out what happens after that. Yeah, I just don't feel equipped to do that.
And I respect that.
So Kenny Smith walked off. He said he didn't feel equipped to talk about it, to be there. He wanted to stand with the players, those who decided not to play last night. Jones, you sent a tweet along that I had not seen from Sham Sharanya from last night. Said the Lakers and Clippers have voted to boycott the season now. Is that where they're at right now? Is that where you think this is headed?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's still tough to get a good read on what exactly is going on with the vote. So that came out late last night, that the Lakers and Clippers are voting to boycott. Now, from there, LeBron and the rest of the Lakers and Clippers rosters walked out. it's kind of up for debate whether or not that was a polling, like kind of like a straw poll to see where every team was at, or whether or not the Clippers are really going to leave the bubble. I tend to think that it probably more was, hey, are we going to do this? Let's see what kind of support we have for, you know, actually leaving and shutting this down. And, you know, the thing that I would take away from it, how many teams are left now? 16. I was about to say 22. That's not right. So out of the 16 teams, and actually probably fewer than that, because how many teams are gone? How many teams are actually left at the bubble? 10, 12? Only two voted against it. So I would think if we're reading things, well, I would think, A, there's going to be no games today. I think that was pretty strongly hinted at. And I don't really know how the league would pick back up and play today, especially when the Raptors really were the team that got the ball rolling on this. The Raptors really were the first team to be outspoken, followed by the Celtics, followed by the Bucks yesterday walking off, followed by the rest of the league deciding we're gonna boycott as well. I don't know how you play today. I would think the bubble will remain intact going forward, meaning even though the Lakers and Clippers voted it down, I think they're going to continue to play because more teams voted to play. I think it's going to be a majority thing with the Players Association, but there's still gray area there unless I'm missing some reporting this morning. I don't think they know that yet.
No, Adrian Wojnarowski was you know, the one talking about what you just mentioned after that Sharania tweet. He said the discussions on continuing the season are going to extend into tomorrow, which is today, but appears unlikely the games will be played today. Everyone is too emotional, and that's what one high-ranking source says, and there needs to be more time to come together on this because there will be some kind of further polling about this, and I think that's what he spoke to it, and he said it was more of a take a temperature than a final vote. That's what Wojnarowski is reporting.
Yeah, and I think there are teams that want to stay and play, and I think there are teams that want to stay and use this platform, you know, and players that want to stay and use this platform. I'm honestly surprised, and I'm not judging LeBron on this. I'm just surprised that LeBron is one of the players who voted to leave. I mean, you want to talk about somebody who has a lot at stake basketball-wise in this bubble. And remember, LeBron and Kyrie were at odds, whatever it was, months ago, weeks ago, however long back that was. Kyrie said the players shouldn't go, and LeBron's like, no, we're going to go. We're going to go play. LeBron has a lot at stake basketball-wise. And so I was just surprised that he was the one walking out. Again, I'm not judging that. I think, you know, if the players want to use this platform, make their voices heard, put pressure on their billionaire owners to put pressure on, you know, people in the public sphere, whether that is governors or attorney generals or whatever these billionaire owners can do, I think the players should use the platform to do that. But I was surprised that LeBron was the one leading that, because I think there are guys like Jaylen Brown who is pushing back on this a bit and saying, "Guy, are you homesick? Are you homesick and you want to go home, or are you going to go home and actually enact change?" And I think that would be the next step. And I think that's the hard thing from protesting and, you know, wearing Black Lives Matter T-shirts to painting that on buses in the court. How do you actually go about enacting change? And do players just want to leave and quit? Or are they actually going to do something about it? I think that's kind of what Jaylen was pressuring some players about.
Right. And LeBron, in his tweet last night, which has been picked up and is being reported everywhere, he said, "F this, man. We demand change. Sick of it."
What was your interpretation of that? I mean, now that we know he's voting against the bubble, maybe we know now. But I just kind of thought he meant, you know, we're not going to play a couple of games. I didn't realize he meant F the bubble.
No, it's tough to get too much out of it. It's also difficult hearing, you know, certain reporters or anchors. I heard one last night read it as "F this man. We demand change. Sick of it." I'm like, I think you got the man context wrong.
Yeah.
No, it's not F this man. Thank you, DOB. It's F this, comma, man.
Yes,
we demand change. Sick of it. And that is what I wonder in these discussions that they're having. Okay, we're not going to play. We're going to sit out these games, and we are going to make a statement by doing that. Then what? And I'm not saying they're wrong to not play. I'm wondering, you know, if they are going to, if they feel compelled to, or whether it's their responsibility to use their profile and their platform to do something beyond just not playing. Because you know, the general public, not just the American public, but just kind of the attitude is, well, if you don't have that to look at something else, right? You know, it's a very calloused reaction to some of this stuff. And just not playing is not enough. There needs to be more. And it just sucks that, you know, these players now feel it's somehow their responsibility to do something about that. Why do we have to do something? But they're all obviously very, you know, there's a lot of strong opinions on this, and a lot of the NBA players and the coaches and in with regard to Kenny Smith feel just as strongly. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I can't do this. I can't, you know, go out there on the court, pretend everything is just another day, because just another day is not good enough. Not for how I'm feeling about this, and not me personally, but for what happened in Wisconsin and what continues to happen again and again and again. And we got to do something.
Right. So to me, they
but what they do, I don't know. And I don't know if they know.
Well, if the message is that we can't go on and just live life like it's a normal day, like, you know, the NHL, if that's the message, then I think the players have already done that. Right. And I'm not saying they need to stop at this or anything like that. Like, there's more that needs to be done. But that message was driven home. Right. Hey, we're not playing playoff basketball again. We're not the NHL. We're not pretending like we're not spending 5 seconds of silence and then carrying on with our day. We're not the NHL. We're going to do something about it. And I think the NBA's already done that. And I'm imagining they'll probably continue to do that maybe through the weekend. I wonder. I do wonder what the value would be in shutting down the bubble, especially if there is, you know, and this is financially for the players. Especially if there's a potential lockout down the line. Like, I think leaving the bubble entirely would be dangerous for the players. That's a secondary consideration, I know, for them for what's going on right now. But I think if the point is we're not going to keep living every day and ignore and brush things aside, I do think they've already sent that message, and it was a strong message. And I think you can do that for a good 3 or 4 days and then, you know, maybe think about getting back on the court.
Yeah, and just the other thing, too, is I think this is going to bleed into some other sports now, too. Baseball last night, WNBA did as well. And
MLS.
And then who knows what happens with football.
Yeah. Definitely not the NHL, though. They're not.
No, not them.
No. They're not worried about it.
So Chris Webber spoke at greater length about this. We'll hear from him when we continue. We'll get the headlines from Joe Murray and more here on Toucher and Rich with Hardy and Adam Jones on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Sports Hub. This is the home of the Bruins, the Celtics, and these guys. Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Toucher and Rich with Hardy and Adam Jones and Joe Murray. Continuing with what happened last night, in addition to the Bruins, the big story, not only in sports, but just everywhere. Everyone is talking about what happened with the NBA and the boycotts that took place last night, not only in the NBA, but also in Major League Baseball and in Major League Soccer. And, you know, a lot of people are questioning, you know, not necessarily for what. By now, we all know what happened in Wisconsin. Some of the other events in Wisconsin right around the time as that happened, like during the riots. And believe me, I do not want to get into the details of what we have probably all seen by now on Twitter and different videos and cell phone videos. There's a lot going on that a lot of people are confused about and angry about. and in terms of the NBA players who boycotted last night, are just fed up with. And they're not doing it. They're not going out and going about as business as usual, which leads more people to say, well, what does this accomplish? And I guess in my own way, I said it too. Now what will you do? I don't have a problem. You have a problem with them but boycotting the games last night?
No.
I don't know any right-thinking person or reasonable person that says they're wrong for not wanting to play last night. But I think it is also a reasonable question to then ask, all right, now what? And it's a tough ask, especially for a 23 or a 24-year-old who really just wants to play basketball and has, you know, moved his life around a little bit in order to go down there and be in the bubble and participate in the playoffs that maybe his team, he even knows, doesn't have a real chance of winning. But, okay, I'm doing this. I'm doing my job. And I'm playing the game that I love. But I'm also feeling personally like it's time to do something, but to do what? And then Chris Webber spoke about this last night, too, in terms of trying to use this to, I guess, force some kind of change.
If not now, when? If not during a pandemic and countless lives being lost, if not now, when? That's all I just want to hear from the rest of the night while everybody's pontificating and thinking and soapboxing and all of that. We know nothing is going to change. We get it. Martin Luther King got shot and risked his life. Mega Evers, if we've seen this and all of our heroes constantly taken down, we understand it's not going to end. But that does not mean, young men, that you don't do anything. Don't listen to these people telling you don't do anything because it's not going to end right away. You are starting something for the next generation and the next generation to take over. Do you have to be smart? Yes. Do you have to make sure that you have a plan? Yes. Do you have to be articulate about that plan? Yes. All of those things. But that's what you're going to do. They're professionals. They know how to be the best of themselves. And so I applaud it. I applaud it because it is the young people. It is the young people leading the way. And I applaud them.
It's a tough ask. It really is. I mean, you say, all right, you guys are going to boycott. Now what are you going to do? I don't know. Jones, what would you do if you were in this position? Well, here you are, you know, a grown man, you know, you've got a lot. And by the way, Jones is one of these people. You could tell me Jones was 28 or 45. And I would say, okay.
36.
36, right in the middle.
Yeah.
How about that?
Split the diff.
Huh. But You are older than most of these NBA players. You have a job that affords you the opportunity to do things outside of your job. You don't have to dedicate your life to training, nutrition, practices, shoot-arounds.
None of that. I just show up at 7 o'clock to do a half-hour show before we hand off to the Bruins. Then I sit there and watch a hockey game and then talk for like an hour after.
And no locker rooms.
Yeah, no, I would never set foot in one of those.
As supremely prepared as you are,
yep,
you've got oodles of free time. You're just filling up the hours with the baby vulture.
Yep.
So, sometimes the day is just about filling up the hours, okay?
All the time, yeah.
So you are now tasked as part of, you know, just maybe with your coworkers here, you know, affecting a social change that will somehow bring about an end to racism and what you feel is mistreatment of people like you who look like you. How are you going to do it?
Well, so I think the first question is, where do you think you can accomplish more? Is it in the bubble or outside of the bubble, right? I think that's the main question for the players right now. And my answer, and, you know, I am, you know, I'm not black. I may be, you know, not the most tapped in to this perspective, and maybe I have it wrong. But my perspective would be, I think you can accomplish more in the bubble. And I think what the players have done by canceling playoff games does get the world's attention. What were we just watching this morning? Like the local news, this is always a good indication. They have Maz on this morning talking about, you know, what's going on in the NBA. It is a national news story, right? It's not just a sports story. It is a national news story. So they've gotten attention. And now, again, the question is, what do you do with that? And can you accomplish more by leaving the bubble? The fact that they had a bubble allowed them a platform to get the world's attention with this, right? So my perspective would be, you know, if you're going to shut it down for 3, 4, 5 days, whatever that is, I don't have a problem with that. And I like the way you put it earlier, Hardy. I mean, I think most rational-minded people say, okay, you don't want to play some basketball games? That's fine. That actually makes sense. To completely shut it down, I do think would be counterproductive for, you know, their own, you know, personal benefit, which is money that could trickle back to Black communities, and put forth to, you know, re-educate law enforcement. They could dog ear that money for a lot of things. And if you're tempting a lockout, that could really upset some of that. On top of it, I think this platform is a powerful thing. So I would stay there. I would continue to play after whatever this cool down period would be where you feel you need to get the message across. And what I would do, I said this earlier, I would lean on ownership. I think the NBA has pledged $300 million over 10 years to spur Black growth, Black economic growth. That's, I mean, all due respect, it's better than nothing, but that's borderline nothing for billionaire owners, right? Like, that's $1 million a year per team for 10 years. And you could do more. You could make sure while you have the attention of your billionaire owners who don't want this season to shut down, again, you could lean on them to work their political contacts. You know, can you talk to a state governor? Can you talk to a senator, a representative, an attorney general? I mean, I think that would be a way to actually enact some change, potentially. And I think you have the power to do that with this bubble. I think if once you leave and the players are spread out, it's not like they don't have a voice. But I think, you know, the unification and the power they have of shutting a league down like they did yesterday, I think they can accomplish more there than outside of it. But those would be what I would do. I would lean on the owners because those are the kind of people who can, through their contacts and their money, potentially enact change.
It just seems like it's something that they're not going to be able to do by themselves, not because they're not smart enough or they're not compelled enough or they don't feel the responsibility to. It's a huge ask of anybody. What are you actually asking for? We're asking for this to end. How are you going to do that? And the answer to a lot of these questions, oftentimes, as you just alluded to, Jones, ends up being money.
Yeah.
So you lean on those billionaire owners and say, okay, not only do you guys have billions of dollars, but because of that, you have these multifaceted corporations. You got guys on the payroll who just sit around and think about stuff. Why don't you help us out? Help us out and think of a way that we can maybe affect some real change here. Because I don't know how to do it. You don't know how to do it. But if you get enough smart people around and you got enough money behind you, you might be able to start something that continues that won't result in you just having to shut down and walk off the court and throw your hands up in the air and say, I'm sick of it. And like LeBron James said yesterday, F this, man. This has to stop. We would all, not just the players, but I would say in some ways, especially the players. We're talking about some young men who don't have the resources at their disposal to go out there and affect any real change without some help from either the billionaire owners or this groundswell of support from the public. And the groundswell of support from the public is tough when sometimes they feel you, you know, I don't know what to do.
Right.
You don't know what to do.
No.
Nobody knows what to do with this thing. So, yeah, that and within the bubble, with them all together and convened in the same place and have access to media while they're there and each other and maybe, you know, the phone calls to ownership and get everybody on the phone and say, okay, what are we really going to do now? The $300 million, that's nice. What are we going to do?
Well, and there's a Board of Governors meeting today, right? It'll be after we get off the air, I think like 11. So, you know, maybe the players can, maybe the players already do have ownership's ear, right? And I think that would be an important way to get the players back on the floor is for owners. And I think this was a stipulation for LeBron, for owners to do more. And I've seen some people say, well, what more could owners do? Like they've been supportive of players. They've pledged $300 million. Again, I would say, you know, work political contacts, more money. Like I know that sounds callous, but like $1 million a team for 10 years really is not all that much. It's not. 300 as a lump sum sounds nice, but when you get into the details of it and it's for, you know, nebulous, Black empowerment, you know, could you target that at re-educating law enforcement and things like that? Like that, that I think is going to be a big step. What happens at that Board of Governors meeting today as to whether or not they stay in the bubble and continue to play?
John was on the line. I was going to get to his call. He said he was going to talk about the fact that sports have become too politicized. Look, everything is too politicized. I can't go to a cookout without somebody bringing up either Trump or Biden or, it's, you know, post the most innocuous thing you can think of on any social media platform you choose, and it will take approximately 8 seconds for someone to come in there and politicize it. So it's not just sports. Everything. If you don't like the politics of the thing, and by the way, this isn't a political issue.
Yeah. Well,
this isn't politics.
And just right. It's not. It's not. But, you know, I've never really particularly minded that. And I think it's been going on for a longer time than people want to acknowledge. I think, and this is not a novel opinion of mine, but like, I think most of the time when you hear that, it's just people who don't like the opinion, right? I don't want politics in my sports. You know, I don't want any, you know, social topics getting into my sports. Sports are an outlet for me. And
you don't want those social topics.
Right, exactly. Correct. I mean, it's as simple as that. I think it's as simple as that. So, you know, that to me is all that is.
We have a difficult transition to make to the fun and excitement that is Bankroll Boys, but I have something that will help ease the transition.
Okay.
And it is something that involves one of the Bankroll Boys, Joe Murray. Oh. I don't know if you heard yesterday or maybe even the day before, Joe Murray invented a sandwich.
Oh.
Called the McMurray.
Oh, I thought not the Vegas sandwich?
That was a different conversation.
Ah, different one, different,
different
one.
Conversation. We'll share with you that next and celebrate that for a moment before we get to the Bankroll Boys coming up at 7 here this morning on Toucher and Rich with Hardy and Adam Jones.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Like, I didn't really pay attention to it, and now I'm pissed.
Rich.
Put your dress as an ape and jump out of the bushes.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Toucher and Rich, Hardy and Adam Jones. Bankroll Boys are here, ready to go. We've had some pretty heavy conversation this morning, though, and I want something to ease the transition. So, Jones, you have not heard about the McMurray?
No. I've just been sitting here trying to figure out what it could possibly be all break.
Joe Murray worked at a McDonald's, and he came up with his own sandwich, which was what, Joe?
The McMurray burger is what I call it, or the McMurray sandwich.
Okay.
It's actually a special. But it comes with two McChicken patties as the sandwich.
Nice.
So if we're doing it from scratch, it's a chicken patty.
Yep.
It's cheese.
Uh-huh.
It's a quarter pound of beef.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Then you get the middle part of a Big Mac bun. You put that on there.
Okay.
Then you put barbecue sauce, bacon,
uh-huh.
and then you top it on top with a McChicken sandwich. And it's called the McMurray.
With another chicken patty.
So that's your bread, except there is bread on it in the middle.
But that's the part. It's the, you know, in a Big Mac, they have the bottom, the middle,
sure.
and
no,
it's
yeah,
that middle
one.
Piece. So you can put the barbecue sauce and the bacon on it.
Got it.
Instead of just putting it on the burger.
So Lockhart put together a quick little jingle for it, which was brilliant.
Oh, nice.
I had two chicken patties and put a beef patty in between it and just ate it like that. I called it the McMurray burger.
Okay. Simple, effective. And that's what the campaign lives on right there.
Yep.
That's the benchmark for the campaign.
Yeah.
But we need viral stuff, too.
Yeah.
So we need a song that kind of celebrates it.
Okay.
Had two chicken patties and put a beef patty in between it and just ate it like that.
Did you make this in your home?
No. I one time worked at a McDonald's. Chicken sandwiches, and I put a quarter pound beef in the middle of it. I called it the McMurray burger. We can make it a song if you want.
Make me your McMurray. Make me one.
You gotta try.
Joe, look at me. It's unnecessary.
It's not.
It is great. Completely, especially if you're having a milkshake with M&M's on the side.
Yes.
You don't need the chocolate sauce on your french fries.
I think it's spectacular.
I don't want you to do it anymore. The hell's the matter?
I mean, I'm a fat guy. I've tried a lot of things, man.
So I think that's another component of the campaign to kind of get the sandwich on menus and to get it out there. And that's like a grassroots thing.
I'm spitballing here.
Yeah.
But why not just, you know, and maybe I'm out of line, Joe. I don't want to suggest to you what to do, but maybe just next time get the.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.